Amra Pajalak is the fan. Hi, have I said that right?
Pajalik, yes.
Pajalik, yep. Welcome. Now, your debut novel, The Good Daughter, came out in 2009. You live in Melbourne and you love Kate Kennedy's writing.
I do. I have followed Kate Kennedy for a really long time. At one time it was a bit embarrassing because I was showing up at every event that she was doing. I'm like, hello. And then I sort of thought, okay, this is getting a bit weird. But yes, I have loved everything that she's done.
Can I just say it is no hardship. Every writer loves the idea of being followed, even perhaps stalked by people. To think that anybody is reading your work feels like the most fantastic thing. So I didn't mind one little bit.
Yes, Amra, she did suggest your name.
Oh,
I should explain to the listener, you didn't muscle in here. You're not just some girl who was hanging out the front. We thought,
oh, all that stalking in. Paid off. Wonderful.
And has Kate influenced your career?
She has. I love her short stories. I love the warmth of them. And you know, sometimes I find some of the short stories they're a bit too literary for me or abstract. And what I love about her stuff is that it really appeals to me. It's got heart to it, and of you know, read pretty much everything that she's done, and try to write short stories, but now I'm getting to the point where my stories are too big and I can't quite fit them into the form.
Right. So they're turning into something, what, unwieldy or something grander?
Grander. Every story could be, you know, a novel in itself.
Well, your book, The Good Daughter, did that begin as a piece of short fiction, or was that something that you always knew was going to be a larger form?
I knew that would be a larger form. It sort of started as an autobiography, as a lot of the first debut novels do, and then it just kind of grew and grew and grew, and then it was really hard getting it into a format that could be published because there was so much story and this is something I suffer from.
Did you find that there was that kind of gap where you think, now I have to step back and fictionalise this, now I have to move away from my own life and I have to see how this becomes its own story-like self?
Yeah, and I love that process, and it actually gets to the point now where I can't tell what story is real, what story is the fictionalised version. You know, some of the things that happen to me, like when I go to schools and I talk about, you know, one of the events in the book about being bashed, I have to actually sit there going, okay, the reality was this, and this is what happened in the book, because I love that process of giving it to your character and leaving it. It's quite cathartic.
And I mean, are there any questions you'd like to ask Kate?
There are some questions I would love to ask.
We're sitting right here in the Books and Arts lounge room.
That's
please
right.
Pull up a bean bag.
I think of it as our lounge room.
I'm on the brown corduroy couch.
I'm not in the beanbag. I'm in the reclining chair with my feet up in the air. Go on.
In Overland a few years ago, you wrote a piece about social media and interacting with it, and you were saying that you won't engage in it as it prevents you to be truly reflective the way a writer should. And you're still haven't done it, and I admire you so much for that. But I was just wondering, do you think there are any disadvantages to this in terms of, you know, fans and readership, etc., or do you only see advantages in terms of your own writing?
Well, there are pros and cons of, and I'm not so much a refusenik. As I say in the article, I love the internet. What's not to love about the internet? It's fantastic. What I don't like is my whole day being chopped up and taken up by checking emails every 3 minutes or surfing the net to the point where I kind of emerge 7 hours later feeling all kind of over-caffeinated and bewildered. I like the idea of sitting with an idea and not having those, trying to switch off those outside distractions, I guess. And I'm not saying this to everybody. I think however people use this kind of technology and medium is fantastic, but I make the point in the article, I think that for a creative life, you really need a bit of quiet. There's a fair bit of sort of looking out the window thinking in the writing life, and it doesn't, people talk a lot about, oh, it's to, you know, have that kind of network, or it's to talk to other writers, and that's all great, but there's a point where that has to be switched off and you need to actually sit and think, well, what are my preoccupations? What are my ideas? How am I going to feel about this? How am I going to make something out of
this? I reckon too, Amber, that one of the issues for writers is always that it's easy to think of other things you should be doing when you're writing. You know, I always go and clean the bath. I'm a great cleaner of the bath. If there's writing to be done,
yes.
Not at any other time, but if there's writing to be done, I will suddenly develop an urge to clean the bath or prune the roses.
Hey, guys, you're talking to the girl who puts a jug of water in the fridge so that when I make a cup of tea, it takes that much longer to boil.
Oh, no.
Seriously.
Oh, that's shameful.
I'm sorry to have had to confess it finally on national radio, but it's true.
Do you find that, Amra? I mean, you know, that if you're blogging or tweeting, that actually you're telling yourself you're writing, but actually you're not writing. You're doing something else.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. I have to leave the house because the temptation of broadband is just too much, yeah. and I just don't stop.
And it's interesting because I think when people, it's that whole thing of here I am now, that social media thing, here I am at the party having a good time, here I am in the cafe eating this muffin, here's a photo of the muffin, here's my, yes. that whole thing of reporting on yourself all the time, which to me seems like the kind of antithesis of what you're wanting to be doing when you're looking at an idea, that you want to kind of disappear into that subject matter and not have yourself or your ego constantly chattering and talking about how you're feeling, what you're thinking, what you're doing now. I want to switch that stuff off, you know, to find the heart, as you said before, to find the real heart of what it is that you are interested in. It's like, you know, I think it might be Goethe or Thoreau or someone said, it's like a bone, you're circling round, go back and gnaw the bone again, bury the bone, go back and dig up the bone, what's the bone? You have that point where you become so interested in that that you have to learn to switch off the other kind of more public and banal distractions which are happening. And let's face it, it's pretty banal by and large, isn't it?
It is. And also you get to the point where you're like walking along, oh, that's a great tweet. I have to do that when I
have to
get
stop
home.
Now and report on my life now.
Yes. You know? Instead of putting it all in your fiction.
Have you got another question on your sheet?
I do. I one of the things that I've always been interested about is, you know, short story length in Australia. It's only 3,000 words is sort of the norm for a lot of competitions and submissions. And in America, it's much longer. You know, the norm is sort of 10,000 words. And, you know, are we being disadvantaged by not enjoying this form to its fullest?
That is a really interesting question. One, you often hear this because how long is a short story? Like, you're right. Is it because we have that shorter form because I think how we've re-kick-started the short story industry is through competition.
I'm hearing a Texan saying, you sure that you call that a short story? Right. You should see our short stories.
Yes. We've got 10,000-word short stories in Texas. And it's like, because you don't know when to shut up, mate. That's why. Whereas the shorter form is the beautiful form. And the discipline of the short form is very difficult. But I think we've got to write as long as they need to be. That's what I think. If it's got to be 5,500 words, we need to make it 5,500 words, you know. We have to find how the story can open and close within that time and not think, well, the regulations are 1,000 words or something. That's so difficult. The shorter it gets, the harder it gets, don't you think?
And that's my bias. I'm hoping for longer short story competitions and opportunities because my stories are
growing.
Know, yes, always.
Now, Amory, you have published a non-fiction book called What a Muslim Woman Looks Like. Are you divided? Are you a fiction person some days and a non-fiction person the other days?
Yeah, it's developing more now where I'm sort of developing more of an interest in non-fiction too and wanting to explore that form a little bit more. And this year it's actually gotten awful where I'm blocked and I'm like, I don't know what to write. I've got so many ideas, so many things I can do.
Should I tell lies or tell the truth?
That's right. And somehow, yes, it's very schizophrenic. Depends on the day that you talk to me.
Yes, well, you'd have to remember, which was, as you said, started, you know, this conversation saying you didn't know what was true and what was fiction.
Yes.
If you're going to claim it's true, it better be true.
It better be, and that's the problem. And also a lot of the stories I want to write are.
As we learnt on This American Life over the weekend.
Just this weekend with Mike Daisy. Very interesting thing to be following at the moment. Online, obviously.
Yeah, wasn't that an extraordinary episode?
Incredible episode.
And if you haven't heard that, I guess you can podcast it, can you? I suppose you can.
You can.
Yeah, so that was an amazing thing. Thank you for coming in, Amory. It's been lovely to meet you. And Kate Kennedy, that hour has gone like lightning.
It's flown. I have to have a coffee now with Amory so we can continue chatting.
It's been so kind of you to make the journey down the highway and join us here on the show.
I've loved being here. Thank you for having me.
Kate Kennedy has been my guest throughout this hour, and it's been an enormous pleasure. And that's the program for today. We're here every weekday at 10 o'clock in the morning, and you can podcast this show, of course, anytime you like. You might like to hear all that again. We'll just pop along online tomorrow. David Williamson, he wants more regulation to get more Australian content on our screens and on our stages.